Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend Tim Miller and my good acquaintance Sam Stein sitting in for Sarah Longwell.
Come on, man. I wanted more than that.
It's Twilight of the Cucks. In the last 24 hours, we've gotten former Arizona Governor Doug Ducey saying, "I will be voting for Republicans up and down the ballot in November, and both Donald Trump and Carrie Lake have my endorsement." Richard Burr, you guys may remember Richard Burr, one of the Republicans who voted to convict Donald Trump for impeachment. "Maybe someone will have a hard time squaring my decision to vote for Donald Trump this time around. I don't have a hard time squaring with it because I firmly understood why I voted for impeachment. And like I said, that's not a disqualifier as to whether you can serve. It's a bad choice I thought a president made one time."
Technically not true. Technically false, but continue.
And this follows.
Technically, it was a disqualifier. I just want to make clear. Technically, it was a disqualifier.
Also, yes. Nikki Haley went on Fox News to kind of, sort of criticize Donald Trump, but not really. She said, "One thing Republicans have to stop doing: quit whining about her." Her being Kamala Harris. "We knew it was going to be her." Now, that's interesting. So she. Nikki Haley said in the course of this interview that, you know, she knew the entire way that it was ultimately going to be Kamala Harris as the nominee. That's interesting. I don't think she said that once during the course of her campaign. She tried to run against Kamala Harris for reasons which had absolutely nothing to do with racism, but never actually said Kamala Harris will be the Democratic nominee. Anyway, it's just, a bunch of people for whom the current Republican Party has absolutely no use, out there proactively taking stands that nobody is asking them to make on behalf of a guy who fucking hates them. Nothing to see here, just normal. This is the funny thing. Trump and the MAGA people were right about the cuckservatives, as it turns out. They had them pegged.
Yeah.
Tim?
Sam, why doesn't the good acquaintance? I think the good acquaintance.
Does the good mild, acquaintance get the
I think
first?
I think the mild acquaintance of JVL should go first. You know, because maybe that he can warm up to.
We've just met.
I got slightly more.
We've never even. Sam and I have never even sat down and licked each other's face yet.
Okay.
No, that's true. It's like almost like a COVID era beginning here for our relationship. But yes, Trump had him pegged. I'm trying to think which one I find to be the most. Repulsive of the endorsements here. I mean, Kemp, Trump insulted his wife. Like, I feel like
we didn't get to Kemp. I'm sorry. Let me just read it. Sam.
Oh, we haven't got to Kemp. Yeah, go to Kemp. Yeah.
"My focus is on winning this November and saving our country from Kamala Harris and the Democrats, not engaging in petty personal insults, attacking fellow Republicans, or dwelling on the past." That was like a week ago.
And that it's important to note that came after Trump. Went after Kemp's wife directly for saying she wouldn't vote for Trump. So I kind of put Kemp in kind of a unique category because I feel like going after the wife is on a personal level that the other ones are not. That said, Kemp's still in office and like Doug Ducey's not. You don't have to do this, right? You just don't have to do this. And I think we all know that if Ducey was kind of alone and talking to his friends and, you know, being honest with them, he probably despises Trump and thinks he's a complete loser. But that's what is head scratching me. He's like, maybe Doug Ducey feels like he's got a future in the Republican Party. He doesn't. You should realize that. And he doesn't have to do this. He probably would feel a lot better if he didn't do this. So I think Ducey outranks Kemp on these rankings for me.
Yeah, I'm going to say fuck all these fucking people. JVL, I'm so fucking mad at these people. That's why I want Sam to go first.
Are you still mad, though? At this point, it's so expected. It happens every time. There may be
take my blood pressure right now. Take my blood pressure right now. It's skyrocketing just reading and having to think about these people. I would take Tommy Loren and Carrie Lake over these guys
100%.
7 days out of the week and twice
on
Sunday.
Tim, I say
fuck
all the time.
Those people.
Give me Marjorie
fuck
Taylor
these
Greene
people
because at least she believes it.
At least we know where she is, okay? Right, at least there that she has the courage, if you want to say that, of her convictions. She wants authoritarianism. She wants to live in a Donald Trump autocracy. She'd be happy with it. And so at least I can deal with that, and I can deal with her as a counterparty. This bullshit from Ducey and Burr. I guess the Burr, I'll start with Burr. This is a sleeper. This one is the most annoying for me, I think. Just to repeat from the beginning, he voted to bar Donald Trump from running again. So technically he did. And he says in this answer, in this interview, he's like, he didn't see it that way. Well, I'm sorry, but like you did. That's like being on a jury and the question is if the person is guilty
for him to go to jail. I was just voting that he was guilty of that thing.
Yeah, right. So I didn't want them to go to jail.
Who knew?
I was just weighing in that it was I was morally disapproved of what they did. It's like, no, like your actions have consequences. This was the thing that fucking pissed me off the most. You didn't read. Here's Richard Burr, when asked about how he felt after taking that vote. My wife would tell you it was a relief because I no longer had to travel around the state speaking to Republican groups. I could sort of do my thing. Fuck you. He's like, oh, it's nice now. Not only do I not have to experience any consequences of my actions, I don't even have to deal with the rubes. I don't even have to talk to them. I don't need to have any social contact with the MAGA people. Like, nobody hates the MAGA people more than these assholes.
Unburdened by the past, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even have to do that. So now I can just sit in my sockless penny loafers at the Outer Banks, and I can just vote to support Donald Trump, and fingers crossed that autocracy doesn't happen, and I don't even have to be bothered by the riffraff while I do it. Screw you, Richard Burr. Doug
none
Ducey.
Of these people
Again,
are actually going to vote for Trump, though. That's the other thing. I'm sorry. I would bet a watch that these people are all going
to
vote for Kamala Harris.
Don't try to get me less mad. He is. He's telling you he is. It doesn't actually matter whether he does it. He's telling you he is.
This is what I'm saying. It's even worse, Tim. Tim, it's even worse because they aren't going to actually vote for Trump. Nobody's asking them, but they feel compelled to stand up in public and swear fealty to a gang that hates them and just stomped them out anyway. It's amazing.
Let's go through the Doug Ducey list. I'll be voting for Republicans up and down the ballot. The cherry on top for Ducey is that he's also voting for Carrie Lake,
right?
Who literally is just like all they called him Doug Ducey, like at Carrie Lake events. Like they hated Doug Ducey. They've accused him. Both of these people have accused him of being part of a corrupt plot to overturn the election. So it's not like that they just have criticized him. They've said that you are
they put him in legal trouble too, right? I mean, like he hasn't been indicted or anything like that. But like, there's ongoing investigations into what's going on in Arizona. Trump directly complicated his life. He ruined his career, and then Ducey turns around, has no career, and says, "You know what? Yeah, I'll vote for Trump." It's like, I wonder what level has to be crossed for them to just finally.
His reasons.
Yeah.
He gives his reasons. The border must be secured. Again, okay, like sure. Donald Trump scuttled the border deal. Inflation must be tamed. Doug Ducey is a businessman. Like, he knows, like, we're not getting deflation. The new inflation numbers came out today. It came back down to 2.9%. Donald Trump is running on an inflationary agenda. He wants to do a 10% tariff across the board. Fuck you. Don't tell me you're voting for Donald Trump because inflation is going to be tamed. America must be respected around the globe again. So we're going to put Donald Trump, the fucking reality TV star who can barely speak, like, who incited an insurrection at the Capitol? That is how we're going to be respected among the globe again? Are you fucking kidding me? The Supreme Court should not be restructured. The Republicans are going to have the Senate. The Republicans are going to have the fucking Senate. What are you talking about? Like this whole list is ridiculous. School choice must be supported. Like, this is not a federal issue. Like, what is happening? What is happening? Fine, go run against Katie Hobbs again or something. Like, it'd be one thing if it's like, hey, I'm getting behind Tom Galvin or Steve Richer, or one of the three people with integrity in Arizona to run for Arizona to fix the school choice problem. But all the rest of this is fucking bullshit. Fuck you, Doug Ducey.
Let me go a little further. I'll even take J.D. Vance over these guys. Because when J.D. Vance did his pivot, he went full whole hog and tried to get something out of it. And I don't understand what they're trying to get. This is what I don't like. Where I don't understand the psychology of it.
Hit their calls
very
back.
Seriously.
I mean,
they want to get their fucking phone calls back. He wants to be invited to the conferences.
Guess is Burr probably has some like business incentives. I don't know if he's actually a lobbyist or anything, but I imagine he's in that field and he wants some access. Kemp, he's in office. Like, you can make the case he doesn't want to tank that by being on the wrong side of Trump, although he does better than Trump regardless. Ducey, I don't get. Like, I just don't fathom it. And to your point about Vance, like, Vance, yeah. I mean, Trump never ruined Vance's career. I mean, Trump ruined Doug Ducey's career. Trump, like, ruined Richard Burr's career. Trump has tried to ruin Brian Kemp's career. He endorsed a primary challenger against him. And his reward for doing that is their fealty. And it's just mind-boggling.
It turns out that spite is necessary for a healthy and functioning politics. Right? Because without spite, people just, you know, roll over.
Or principle. How about spite or principle?
Sure.
I'm not even forcing you to have principle. But if you refuse to have principle, at least have spite.
Yeah, one or the other.
Like, having neither seems to be completely disqualifying.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. No, I would like, Mickey? Like, the Doug Ducey thing makes me so mad. I would definitely, if Doug Ducey runs for president in 2028, and it's Doug Ducey Ron DeSantis and J.D. Vance, he would be my last choice. He would be the last choice of them for me. I like this. It's unforgivable. It is so cowardly. It is just like, at least Ron DeSantis has an ethos. At least you know what you're dealing with Ron DeSantis. I just can't. These people are the worst people in American politics.
What about Nikki?
All right. Give me some Nikki stuff.
Nikki's hard. The Nikki Haley thing. That's 17 seconds where she talks and she says,
I loved it. I thought it was great.
We're not like, Sam, you could go back to Dartmouth. You know, things don't go out well in your journalism career. And you could do a whole course just on 17 seconds of that one clip with her, with Brett Baer, saying that we can't win with somebody that insults people.
It was amazing.
We can't win with somebody that focuses only on himself and crowd size. We can't win when we're going to do that. Like, if we're going to win, we have to. It's like, and then she goes, the American people aren't stupid. The American people aren't stupid. They should get better. They should get better than this. And it's like, are you stupid though?
Right.
Like, are you stupid? Who is the smart one in this case? This whole notion that like she's not rendering any judgment on it. She does not have any particular problems with Donald Trump's behavior.
No.
It's just there are some other people out there, not her, who
aren't
stupid.
Many people are saying,
and you need to appeal to these non-stupid people.
Right. It was being interpreted. So I was interpreting. I was on Morning Joe today, and they were interpreting it as her trying to persuade Trump to act in a more rational manner, or at least the people around Trump. And I thought that was even more mind-boggling. Because
like he's going to listen to her?
Yeah. Like, first of all, like, he listened to her, one, obviously he wouldn't. But two, we've been through like 8 years of this. Like, people think, like, if only he could just tone it down a little bit and do less this and like be more normal. And it's like, he would win. It's like, yeah, yes. But at 8 years in, I feel like we know that he can't. And the idea that Brett Baer appearance through Nikki Haley would channel the energy he needs in the direction is silly, let alone that he would listen to her because he has almost no respect
for her.
I've
got a strategic question for you guys about this. So Mona and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. Jerry Baker had a column in the Wall Street Journal, the same thing, right? You know, if only he would concentrate on the issues and stop the crazy.
I feel like we've really fallen down on our job at the Bulwark that we didn't create the Wall Street Journal Ed Board Watch vertical that I wanted to do, which is like have a live blog replying to everything on the Wall Street Journal Ed Board. But anyway, continue.
I think that as an objective matter, as an objective matter, that advice is wrong. In that a boring.
You think you should go full crazy?
I think the crazy has always been his secret sauce. I think that in an attempt to fight Nikki Haley's momentum as a cultural icon, he needs more crazy because he needs to continue to hijack attention. And that is his only play and his best play because that's what his voters want. his voters aren't there for the flat tax or, you know, the tap gains tax cut or something like that. This is the Wall Street Journal's fantasy, right? Oh, the people really, the people aren't stupid. They care about the real issues. No, no. Donald Trump is powered by low propensity, low information voters who do not turn out in other elections. And those people are motivated by the entertainment value of Donald Trump.
And I agree with that. I don't want Trump,
which just acted like Paul Ryan. The idea like, well, that's how he should win. I mean, just objectively, it's wrong.
So first of all, I don't want to pass without letting people know that JVL just went full Biden with the whisper. I loved it. Loved it. But I think to your point, like the only way he has won ever was doing what you said, right? Like now that's not, I don't think that's guaranteed for success, right? Like but it is the only way he won, which is just like completely scorched earth, absolutely crazed, you know, and then just lower Hillary Clinton down enough that he can eke by. And so I do think that's his one play. And sure, that's his, you can call it a strength, I guess. But it doesn't guarantee success. He's lost everything else. And so he's going to do a press conference tomorrow. We've been reporting, Caputo reported, like internally they're trying to figure out if they can kind of rein him in and do fewer of these events. But clearly, since Caputo reported that, he's like re-engaged on Twitter. He did the Elon Musk thing. He's now doing a press conference. Like he's just going to do what he wants to do. And so maybe the answer is just like unleash it. I guess I don't know. It's like high risk, very high risk, somewhat rewarding, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, he is him. I guess I don't. I guess on the margins, like some advice to maybe have a messaging event one day, like while also still being Trump from time to time would like not be horrible advice. I guess he doesn't have to be 100% Trump. He could be 88% Trump and potentially still, you know, get the Goldilocks of being crazy enough to engage his people while also like driving a message. Maybe like that's one idea, but I'm not really here to give Trump advice. I'm here to psychoanalyze Nikki Haley because I want to go back to her for a little bit more. I keep looking at the quote and it's like, I want this campaign to win. You do? Okay, I guess she does. But the campaign's not going to win talking about what race Kamala Harris is. It's not going to win talking about whether she is dumb. You can't win on those things. And so it's, she's not saying those things are bad, right? She's not saying, I don't think he should do those things. She's not saying that that is costing her vote, right? And then she goes on to say, like, the American people aren't dumb. You've got to give them something else. So what she's saying, she's on Fox, and she's basically saying, all of us here were mentally... we are mental midgets. We are very stupid. We are very gullible. And we like bad Trump. So we're doing it. Like, we're all in. All right. It's fine. He can say that Kamala Harris isn't black. That's not going to nudge Nikki Haley one iota. All right. Nikki Haley is in no matter how racist Trump is, no matter how sexist he is, no matter how offensive he is, no matter how big of a criminal he is. Nothing he could do could possibly change Nikki Haley's vote. Okay. So. The thing, though, that she observes is that there are other people out there that aren't dumb like me. It's basically her saying, I am bird brain. You are right, Donald Trump. I accept it. I am bird brain. But we have to reach out to people that are not bird brain. That's literally her quote. There are other people that aren't dumb. We've got to win over them.
Trump had her pegged.
I'm dumb.
From the very, very start. And either, by the way, that formulation, the American people aren't stupid. She's used it before, and the first time was when she was asked whether or not she would vote for Trump if he was convicted of a felony. And she brushed that off by saying, nobody's going to vote for somebody who's been convicted of a felony. The Republican people are, or the American people aren't stupid. She's like, okay.
She might be right about that, turns out.
She also said when she left the race that Trump would have to earn her support. He subsequently did nothing at all to earn her support. Like literally didn't call her, didn't do anything.
Kept breathing.
Got her support. He did keep breathing.
He did keep breathing.
He stayed alive. Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know. My contempt for these people, because
it's just unending. It's a cup that will never be filled.
But I do want to explain though, for people who are listening who might be thinking, why are these bored people with their TDS so deranged? The reason for my contempt is that people like Trump always exist, right? In every society, there are people who fetishize authoritarianism. the authoritarian move only succeeds when the people who know better go along with it. And that's why the success of Trumpism is due to people like Doug Ducey and Brian Kemp and Nick Haley, the people who know better and who were unwilling to sacrifice a single iota of their ambition to stop it. And F them. All right.
That's right. Good news is they might be failing. Things aren't going that great.
We'll get to that in a minute. This show is sponsored by Roan Apparel. Wanting to look good without having to think about it? A versatile, durable, refined wardrobe that is easy to style and exudes confidence effortlessly in a wide range of social and professional events. Men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and lucky for us, Roan stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and truly versatile set of products known to man. They have products for every occasion. Talking about the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos, blazers, t-shirts. They look great as individual pieces and work seamlessly together. Roan's signature four-way stretch fabric is breathable, flexible, and works anywhere from your commute to work to the 19th hole. It's time for unparalleled confidence without all the hassle. Roan's commuter collection features wrinkle release technology and is 100% machine washable and treated with gold fusion anti-odor technology for more wears between washes. Mm. If you are an animal, you should wash your things between wears. I would say again, I love the Roan fabric. Like they have a fancy name for it. Their signature four-way stretch fabric. It's just really, really comfortable. And their t-shirts are my new t-shirts, my new favorite t-shirt. I'm a sort of t-shirt connoisseur. I'm slowly cycling out my old t-shirt of choice and cycling in the Roan t-shirts. Thank you to Roan for sending me a couple more of those. They're really, really fantastic. I just think they're fantastic, and everybody should treat themselves to a little bit of this because it's nice. It's nice to put on fabric that feels good. Head to roan.com/thenextlevel and use promo code thenextlevel to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head over to rhone.com/thenextlevel and use code thenextlevel. It's time to find your corner office comfort.
Man, the only thing better than that Roan shirt is the way you read the ad.
Yeah.
Richard Burr joined law and lobbying firm DLA Piper, Sebastian tells us. So congrats to people at DLA Piper. Still got that access. That phone calls are going to be returned. No worries there.
This is a real question. I have a real practical question, though. In Richard Burr's life, in his professional capacity now, are any doors opened to him that would not have been opened to him if he had not sat down and given that interview? Because I can't imagine that that's true. I can't imagine that the hostage video.
He's got to bill hours, baby, and he's got to tell those clients like, oh yeah, Tom Cotton's returning my calls. Yeah, I mean,
return his calls irrespective of him giving the hostage video. Yes, I will vote for Donald Trump.
I would say if you're a lobbyist, if you're a big time lobbyist trying to get big time clients, and the Trump administration, let's say they win power, like abhors you and won't take your calls because you voted for impeachment, then yeah, that does hurt. I think you have to.
Is Richard Burr short on cash though?
He's like, not. But you know people who are non-person. They just want to make more money. That's it.
But Sam, him saying what he said is not enough to salvage him within the Trump world. This is what I'm saying.
But not saying what he said is certainly enough to
bury
him.
He's already,
but he doesn't have to win over the Trump world people, JBL. He's got to win over the stupid clients. He's got to convince the stupid clients that are paying the billable hours. Here's the fun fact about Richard Burr. I just Googled him. He went to R.J. Reynolds High School. What a country. What a country.
You think they hand out a pack of smokes at a lunch break?
Was the Marlboro Man their mascot?
God bless America.
Or was it Joe Camel?
Joe Campbell, the mascot.
Only America.
All right. What do you guys want to talk about? Do you want to talk about the Trump meltdown? Do you want to talk about Tim Walz?
Still exists. RJR High School still exists.
I'm not surprised. Let's talk about Trump. Let's talk about Trump and then do Walz, because I think Trump's in the midst of something. and I like it.
Oh, what do you think he's in the midst of?
Well, the Elon thing was like really wild, and then he's doing this whole press conference again, and you know, if you read, I thought your column yesterday was smart, because if you just read between the lines, it's like it seems like they are grasping for some sort of new direction, but dealing with a candidate who can't do it, and that's going to create some sort of combustion at some point, and likely, I would agree with you, I think likely some staff turnover. I don't know when it happens, but we've just got a slew of new polls that just came out today that continue to show that Harris has got a decent lead, honestly, nationally and in the swing states, and you can't, if you're Trump, keep on this path. You got to do.
She's
going to
get a bounce coming out of the convention too. That's the other thing.
Going to get bounced out of the convention.
2.5 weeks out from
her
ceiling.
And then on top of that, JVL, like on top of that though, so you got the convention, and then I think like a week and a half later they have the debate, and I mean maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but like she's gonna trounce him in the debate. Like she's not Biden. She's very capable of doing debates. Like, and he was not good in the Biden debate. Biden was just terrific, and that's gonna be illuminating. So that's two potentially big events.
Get him to a draw. I'm not quite there on Trump.
You don't think so? Oh my God. Maybe I'm getting too ahead of myself.
I don't know. Trump has a weird lizard brain for these debates. The one thing that pundits say all the time, right, which is just wrong. And like I'm like on MSNBC, and like other people say this all the time, and I'm like, I can't interrupt every time and just correct the record, because but it's like Trump lost every debate besides the Biden debate. And it's just like, that is just not true. I mean, Trump won like 17 of 19 GOP primary debates for starters in 2016.
Debates, man.
Yeah, and then the general election debates, like people thought that Hillary won the debates, but like the revealed preference was quite different from the response to the polls. And Biden beat him in the one debate last time, and then the other debate like was like a draw. It was not anything particularly. So it's not like Trump is he's a liar and he's unappealing in every possible way to me personally, but that, I don't know. I think that he
what I think she's going to do is, again, the split screen contrast between old crazy fat man shouting and then like a 25 years younger normal professional person. I think irrespective of the back and forth.
On, seems like. So you might have a crush on, and also some racial animus towards.
Are we not?
So
are we
going to
talk about
a combo of feelings?
We want to talk about his comments about her Time magazine cover, which were so bizarre.
What, I missed these. What did they say?
Oh man, he went on. This was during the Elon thing, and he was talking about her Time magazine cover. It's a drawing of her, and at some point, I can't even do it justice.
Beautiful.
He's like,
she looks like an
looks
actress.
Beautiful. Looks like an actress. And he's like, reminds me of Melania. It's like, oh my God, what are we listening to? Like, what is going on? It was just, it was uncomfortable.
He did once date one of the big reveals from one of my favorite parts of the Maggie Haberman book that got lost because it was just like not really relevant to all of the modern day controversies about Trump. But in between one of his marriages, he dated a mixed race woman who was
Grace Jones.
Maggie
Please
hasn't told
Grace
me anything.
Jones.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. It's a person that's not a public figure. And I have no inside info on this. I'm just saying this as a observant reader. It seems like this woman was a source for Maggie Haberman, because there were a number of like anecdotes. I just don't know who else she would have got them from, like such as, I brought her home to my family and she's like, oh, your smarts must come from, I forget if her mom or dad was white, like the mom's side, and your athletic ability must come from your dad's side. And it was just like these like Archie Bunker racist comments about her gene pool. So anyway, I just think that there's something there. There's a history there, and he might just have a little thing for her,
and be
jealous of her and be slightly racist towards her. So like all of that going around in his head on stage at once, you know, it creates a complex kind of emotional palette.
Frison.
Yeah.
Tension. So tell me, where do we think this thing is headed?
Let
me ask you this. What do you think the steady state version of this race looks like?
Here's what I think. The steady state version of this race that is the one thing that is tempering my coconut enthusiasm is, you know, so you look at these cook polls today, for example, or and they're a little out of date, but let me just pull it up so I get it exactly right. Michigan has Harris +3, Wisconsin +3, Arizona +2, Pennsylvania +1, North Carolina +1, Georgia tied, Nevada +3 for Trump. And I, if she gets into a near kind of in Biden territory for 2020, like the anti-Trump coalition comes back together, she has a narrow lead in these states. Maybe Michigan gets a little comfy. Maybe Wisconsin has a narrow lead. There's a lot of coin flips out there, and you know, all Trump needs is for the Pennsylvania and Georgia coin flip to go his way. So, like, that is, you know, I think that the stable part of the race. Like, she comes out of convention with a national 3-point lead, 2-point lead. Tipping point state is about 2.5 points, and you know, and that's a much better place to be than we were. But that's not, you know, that's not letting you sleep too cozy at night. I am encouraged by. Sarah's not here on the pod. My favorite part of the cook poll. We just want to shout out Sarah. That the Biden-Trump double haters, they tested a mega sample of those. Harris 54, Trump 24 in the head-to-head. And Amy Walter, the great Amy Walter, writes, this is a reminder that the 2020 Biden coalition was more anti-Trump than pro-Biden. Mm-hmm. I've heard that before from somebody.
Yeah. Sounds familiar. On the steady, on your point about steadiness of the race, it's like one thing I keep coming back to is that a fairly tumultuous past month, I think, is an understatement. But there has been one sort of steady principle, which is Trump's numbers. Just, I mean, they're steady if you look at it.
46, right? Like, 47.
They don't move. They are what they are. It's just Harris has made up an incredible amount of ground, and enthusiasm is through the roof for her. And all those Democrats and those double haters who are really just Biden skeptics have come home, and, you know, great. Which just sort of raises the question, though, right? Like, how much fat is left on the bone for her to take? And that I think that's like the kind of, if I'm reading into Tim's analysis here a little bit, it's like, even if she had just a blowout convention and she just absolutely skewered him in the debate and it was just a TKO and all the things broke for her, and like the Iranians didn't hack her campaign, but they did, you know, get more than we thought of, and like all this stuff, all these things, like even with every break possible, are we still looking at a coin flip?
50, like, 46, 4. Right. Like that's it. Right. Like if he's at 50 and he's at 46, and I mean, two, and maybe Jill that's Stein just, is maybe at 2 and RFK's at 2.
Maybe that's just politics, right? Maybe that's modern politics. And that's just how we have our elections. And it's always going to be 6 or 7 states and so on and so forth. There are variables though, right? Like, you know, maybe in this case, North Carolina actually is in play. And like suddenly you add that to the equation and then you don't have to worry so much about Michigan. I don't know, but it does seem like when you asked about the steadiness of the race, that's the steadiness. It's Trump's 46%, and the fact that Doug Ducey and Nikki Haley and Brian Kemp and all those people who should probably jump ship just won't, and here we are.
So if I was going to be optimistic, I would say that
let's do that.
Harris potentially alters all of the turnout models and alters the likely voter calculations, right? So the likely voter calculations are going to largely be based on 2020. Biden's not at the top of the ticket. She is. We don't really know what that means for voter enthusiasm with African-Americans, right? Maybe African-American turnout goes up. Young voters, we don't know what that does to their turnout. And we don't know how she does with the low propensity voters, because we haven't seen it yet, right? She hasn't been tested. Because of her sort of cultural cachet, which is not fully cemented yet, but it's getting there. You know, it's not at Obama levels, but it's in the same zip code. Maybe she is able to do disproportionately well with low propensity voters. And so a combination of increased turnout among African Americans and young voters, and then eating into Trump's margins a little bit with low propensity voters, you could see your way to like a 52-45 if everything broke right, I think. Yeah, I'm not saying that's likely.
That's really optimistic.
Seven.
That's really optimistic.
I'm not saying that's likely, but you could say, I do think that you could see
what was Obama, what was Obama's 08 margin?
It was seven.
I want to find this.
It was seven.
It was seven? Yeah. Okay.
I think you can see your way to a 2008 type split if things went right for her, which doesn't say they will. But I think you also...
I mean, here's the way to get to your optimistic... Yeah. Here's the way to just do some... I'm just doing some rough math. Doing live math is always risky. But it was 81,074,000. Right. What was that? Was that the 2020 total yep. raw vote? The conventional wisdom has been that number was going to come down this time. That because of COVID, it was easier to vote. People were sitting around at home, and that the total numbers would come down. But like, let's say she basically matches it, right? Like, let's say she basically matches the 81, right? And picks up some. You know, some people don't turn out, but she picks up some new people, and she gets to 80. And Trump has a little bit of slippage down to 70, right? 80 million out of 150 is like 53%, right? Now there's going to be some other, scattered RFK Jr. stuff out there. But like, if you just think about it in that raw vote sense, like where it's like, you're just talking about like, can she get to the Biden 20 number and like Trump is unable to get to his, like you can get the number up pretty like it's not insane, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm not putting any money on the craps table about it right now, but like that's not an insane.
It does. It's not insane, but it also in a way kind of supports JVL's theory that Trump just needs to go even more feral, right? Like he needs to just tear her down.
Yeah.
Like, don't button it up. Just tear her down.
He needs to get to 47 while she is at 50.5. And that's his path to victory.
Something like that, yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. If he gets to 47.
I don't know if that's it. She's got to be lower than that. I don't know.
Well, he just needs to eke it out, right? In one of those three blue walls and just hope for the best and the rest. And yeah.
But the popular vote is off the table. People don't understand this, I don't think. Trump was on track to win the popular vote against Joe Biden. And
yeah, that's not happening.
That is now not, that's just not going to happen. Now, does that mean anything?
You're right, because it was based on a bunch of people that didn't like him that were parking their vote with RFK or staying home, and then a small percentage of them that were even planning on holding their nose for him.
Right.
Like his popular vote win was based on people that did not like him.
Yeah.
And that were just not voting for Joe Biden because of age or whatever, inflation, other issues. And so Israel. And so like that now, it's like, that's why that's off the table, right? It's like, it's very hard to win a popular vote based on having a significant percentage of the people like dislike you.
Yeah.
I will say the other element that's at play, not presidential, but like we were all waiting for those Democratic senators to come back to earth too, because they were so outpacing Joe Biden. And the theory was, well, they'll come back to earth and Biden being on the ticket actually will sacrifice the Senate for Democrats. I'm not totally sure it's gone.
No, Kamala can go to their number.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why wouldn't Kamala go to their number? Like, that's the equilibrium.
I think that would be the equilibrium. And if that's the case, then, I mean, such a tough map. But, like, the Senate, I think, is, like, still in play for Democrats to hold it. And that would have been unfair.
No, it's not.
They can lose.
They're going to lose West Virginia and Montana. They're gone. So that's 50.
They're going to lose Montana. I don't know.
Montana's
I don't know.
Okay. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Right. 51 right. though. But 51. The Democrat. This is important, Sam Stein. This is important for the RVAT efforts when we're talking to our Republican voters, winning them over. We've got to assure them that the Republicans are going to control
Republicans
the Senate.
Have some power,
so you don't even need to worry about it. Just go ahead and vote for Kamala. Nothing to worry about. Republicans are going to have the Senate. Socialism not coming.
Okay.
Green New Deal not happening. Don't sweat.
Don't worry,
Don Ducey. Don't sweat. Just keep calm and carry on.
All right. So what else?
All right. We'll edit that portion of the podcast out then. Okay.
No, keep it. Keep it.
JVL, the people want to know your opinion about Tim Walz.
I want to know what it was like to check out for whatever. I know you weren't checked out, but like when you came, what was like the difference between going on break and then coming back? The biggest difference in your perceptions of the current news cycle and politics cycle?
It was harder to care coming back. I'll tell you that. It's nice turning
to
off
be.
And not caring.
Tends to be.
Yeah. I was trying to talk myself back into, gotta get it up for this thing or that thing. It's a little tougher.
Do you need me to send you a little Cialis?
I was just gonna say
a little news Cialis.
You know, the Barry Weiss profile in the New York Times
that
was almost my news Cialis. get me all hot and bothered. Oh, by God. Hell.
I couldn't even bring myself to click on it.
Tim Waltz.
So what else?
I'm interested in Tim Waltz. I think it's interesting.
People are going to be so sad. Comments were just like, "Ugh, we need JBL to be back. We need because Tim Waltz just does nothing for me.
Not excited.
He
not
just
Waltz
does
tells.
Nothing. It's fine. He's fine. I don't have anything against him. Whatever. But he's just. I know Tim Waltz. I don't know. There's some people out there that he's a new type for them. I guess. But I campaigned in Iowa. My family's from West Virginia. I spent a lot of time in rural America on campaigns. I know Tim Waltz. He's a nice guy. He's a nice, jolly, liberal dad. He's nothing. Not coach. He's not. I loved what he did for the Gay Straight Alliance, but I don't. He doesn't get a thrill up my leg or Sarah's leg, and so several people in the comments last week were like, "We need a JVL so that he would understand." It seems like you're not going to give them what they want.
I think he, so. Here's the extent. There are two interesting things about him. The first is what he says about Kamala Harris's ability to make decisions. And I think that says, I wrote about this today in today's newsletter, ding, ding, ding. It says either something very flattering and encouraging about her ability to make decisions or something worrisome. And that is a Rorschach, right? If you want to take the worrisome view, the glass half empty view, you would say, shit. Well, she got bullied off of the pick that she should have made by the left, right?
I don't know about that. The negative view I would give would be, or she didn't want somebody that was threatening, right? Like she wanted a cheerleader. She wanted she wants somebody that was just going to come into the office all the time, and be like, whatever you want, boss. And that's again, that could be a fine trait to want too. I'm just saying like that, but. That feel, it's with all the reporting I've heard on the record and off, feels like he went in there very much like, put me in, coach. I know what it's like to be the defensive coordinator. I was the defensive coordinator. I'll do it for you. And that some of the others went in and were like, I have a lot of thoughts for how.
Wait, JVL, what's the positive view? I want JVL's positive interpretation here.
The positive interpretation is that she looked at the antipathy in the progressive side toward Shapiro, which was absolutely real. And was, of course, magnified by MAGA World, as Mark Caputo reported for us. But it was real. It was not a made-up thing. And she made a very hard-headed calculation that having that was a headache that was unnecessary at a moment when she needs to be exploring her ceiling. And anything that blunted her upward momentum at this point was dangerous to the overall health of her campaign. And that she was then able to pivot and make a very cold-blooded, practical choice to find some other way to please the entire coalition. And so that would be right. That's the, like, hey, that's a good, good. We like that. That's good presidential-type decision-making. And we won't, there's no way of knowing which version of that there is. But here's the thing that interests me. I mean, he is, you guys know this, right? The Minnesota DFL, Democrat farmer labor tradition, is different and distinctive from like mainstream Democratic thought. And I think the Waltzian, which is, I mean, he's a direct descendant of Paul Wellstone, that sort of like liberal economic populism is distinct from like the California land progressivism, which focuses on big government and the environment. And it's distinct from like the identity politics crusades of the campus left.
I like that.
And we haven't tried that at the national level yet, right? Democrats have not road tested Paul Wellstoneism at the national level. And I think that is an interesting potential path forward for liberalism and progressivism that Waltz could represent. And so I find that pretty interesting, and I'm open to the idea that that could turn out very well, right? Because if that type of economic progressivism that is family and worker focused, which is, again, that's just like the whole DFL, If that catches on and is well received by the electorate, you could see that leaching just a little bit out of the populism that's going on in Republican circles, right? I mean, yeah. If you imagine a J.D. Vance-type voter who isn't at all racist, but who really just does care about, like, union jobs and stuff, you could see them saying, well, wait a minute, this thing that this guy over here is selling is interesting to me. And if you can eat into the margins with some white working class voters that way and really reduce MAGA to just the authoritarians, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and the racists, that would be helpful overall in the long term for the fight against authoritarianism.
So that's how I interpreted it. I mean, I interpreted the pick that way when it happened, honestly. I thought this was a calculation that she made, or people made too, that Trump and Vance are playing on a somewhat untraditional turf, although it's common for Trump, right? Like, going to represent, advocate for union workers, but not take labor policies. Going to be a working class guy, but not advocate for a higher minimum wage. And they were going to basically take that turf and say, actually, we're going to own it. We're going to do all the stuff that you want to do, but we're going to just communicate better. And we're going to have policies that may have more resonance with these people. And I think to a degree, it's that calculation has become manifested in just how Walz has campaigned over the past couple of days. He's going to union halls. He's going after Vance, not just for being weird, but for sort of being a phony when it comes to pro-family posturing. So that was my interpretation. The other interpretation I had behind the pick was, and again, no reporting here, unfortunately, but like, there was sort of a vibe element to it. And maybe this gets at your point about the left and wanting to like make sure that they were happy with the ticket. But beyond that, it was reported that she didn't have that same connection with Shapiro. She did have that connection with Walz. Walz clearly made it evident that he had no aspirations to be the number one, and which probably made her feel more at ease. But also, they've been going for this thing that's, you know, future forward, future looking, and joyful, which is the word he keeps bringing up. And I think they've clearly road tested this idea that the electorate also just wants to get away from the nonsense and like not think about politics as a dystopian, you know, fuck fest. You know, it's like awful. They just don't want to deal with it anymore. And that's what Walz is basically promising, is like, let's bring some joy back in. Let's think about the future. Let's do things the right way. Let's be good to each other. And it's all sort of touchy feely and probably impractical, but maybe it works, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. So I have two positives, one negative. My positives, I agree. I like the positive vibes and the joy and just being positive. That stuff does matter in campaigns.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times Democrats have been not that good at that and focused more on policy paper.
They're not quite bad at it. Yeah.
Like Elizabeth Warren was a very bad influence in this way, where a lot of like the people that were big acolytes of her like thought that like
everything was so serious.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, and I think that the Harris and Walz have been a nice contrast for that. Just as a pure political matter. The other positive, just listening to JVL, that pitch was the thing that's made me feel the best about Walz so far. So there you go. You did your job for some of our listeners, just because like, if we could just like take out 20% of the power of the identitarian left and reallocate it towards the populist economic left, even though I'm not really going to probably like a lot of the populist economic policies, like that's still, I think, healthier for the dynamic of our two-party political system, right? Like, let's take a little bit of power away from the identitarian left, a little bit of power away from the MAGA populists, and like reallocate it to some progressive populists through Walz. I like that. I like that possibility. My only negative just listening to all this guys with Harris is, I don't think we have to speculate. Like, they've said it's in public, and I've heard from people in private, that like she vibed with him. Like that it was as simple as that. Like she thought he was gonna be a good wingman. They had a good personal engagement. And to me, I just like the one nagging thing for me that's just like, they just met. You know? Like they just met. Like that would be a more compelling pitch for me if it was like, me and Andy Beshear go way back to 2009 and we're just partners and it's like a buddy comedy whenever we hang out together and I feel comfortable having him in the room for decision making. It's like this random guy comes up. Anyway, just so they're flagging more like, things to be a little nervous about her decision making. They're more
they're more like good acquaintances and not best friends.
Or five mild acquaintances. They literally have spent when she picked him, the amount of time they'd spent together is marginally more than what you two have spent together. And so
I've
that's
seen
just a
buddy
lot
cop
to be like,
to
I want him to be
the
vice
end
president.
Up This is, it's just like Mel Gibson and Danny Glover and Lethal Weapon.
It's going to work.
Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker and Rush Hour. It's a meet cute.
I hope it works. But that's the part that I'm just like, I have to roll my eyes a little bit when I get some people like, the vibes are just so great. I was like, they just met. I don't know. Like, I sometimes meet people and I think that they're great. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, wait. I actually didn't know this person that well, turns out. I just like, let's be grown-ups is all I'm saying. What?
Nobody wants to hear this, but if she loses Pennsylvania by 11,000 votes,
oh God,
this will be regarded as the worst VP pick in the history of VP picks. I think that's unlikely to happen, and I'm not rooting for it to happen.
20 minutes ago, you were like, she's getting 53-45. She's winning Indiana. This is Obama 08 again.
Obama 08.
I'm just saying that we should keep in mind that there... In the same way that I can see a pathway to where the Waltz pick really works out, I can see a way in which it doesn't. And, when you take D. Wade instead of LeBron...
Sebastian is charmed by the love at first sight. See, the Gen Z, there's some of us that... Some people's souls aren't as black as ours, JVL. And it's just like, maybe it just was a match made in heaven, you know?
Well, I feel like you're speaking from some personal experience where you met someone you liked. And
no, not really. Tyler was like my first boyfriend. So, it worked out great for me. But, we had a breakup period and then get back together. It wasn't a 2 weeks. It wasn't like we met, we had a one-hour dinner, and then it was like, I want you to be my vice president. I think that it's just something to monitor. That's all I'm saying.
I guess. You know what? Fingers crossed. Let me ask you this though. Yep. Do you guys think the Harris campaign understood that he was going to be potentially open to Swift boat type stuff?
Yeah,
because
it came up in
did
his,
it come up in
his run for, no, it came up. It was an attack he faced in his run for governor. So they knew it was out there. I'm sure they vetted, but like to Tim's point, you have to understand how condensed this time frame.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. There is no way to do the full proctological exam of vetting on the timetable she was operating on.
But this one attack did come up in his past run. I don't think, obviously, no one's going to get every singular detail about what he said in every utterance, so maybe they didn't understand the full extent of it, but
I'll give one shout out to the vet team, because the biggest concern was not the Swift boats was the George Floyd protests,
right?
And that's what I was really the thing I was the most worried about when he made the pick, and immediately you could tell they already had that in the vet.
They had leaked the audio of
Trump being like, great job, Timmy boy. Really nailed it out there. You were knocking heads. And so like that, clearly they had, the vet was thorough enough to have come up with that because they turned that baby around in about 36 hours.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else you guys had wanted to put a quarter in the machine with me for that I missed last week? No.
What's not happened much. Since you've been gone?
Not much has happened.
I guess the Donald's appearance at the Black Journalists. Were you around for that? What did you think about that?
I was
that?
Around for that. Yeah. I mean, we've had the overall Trump meltdown.
Yeah.
Which I think is, again, I just think is good for him, and I think is his only way forward. Like, he needs to drag Kamala Harris down into the mud with him. Yeah. That is his best chance of victory. And he needs to turn her into another politician and stop her from becoming a cultural icon. And I think she's going to try to avoid that.
Yeah.
It might be too late on that.
Did you have a favorite Olympian?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Sydney McLaughlin-Lavone, who is a Jersey girl. And she runs 400 intermediate hurdles and ran the 4x400 relay. She ran the second leg of that. I don't know if you guys are track nerds.
No, not.
So in the 400 intermediate hurdles, of the 10 fastest times ever run, she owns 6 of them.
Hmm.
Ever.
Like the Katie Ledecky of track.
And, well, not of track exactly, but of this particular discipline. Like her distance. She, so she's a Jersey girl. She went to Union Catholic High School, and by her freshman year, she was like, when she would show up to meets, the girls racing against her were coming to the starting line with pen and paper and asking for her autograph. She made the Olympic team as a 16-year-old. So she went, which is just absolutely nuts. That was the Brazil Olympics. In track, you do not get 16-year-old Olympics or Olympians. You know, you'll get them every once in a while at gymnastics and swimming, but not in track. And watching her run, she 14 steps instead of 15 steps, the intermediate hurdles, which is like a big deal. Only the men do that. She's just, this is going to sound weird, but if you just watch her run for 40 seconds, she mm-hmm. looks different even than all the other Olympic runners. Like her stride is just perfect. It's like it was designed in a lab. And I just, damn, man, dude. I could watch her run all day long.
That's great.
How many, you boys? What school did you say she went to in Jersey? Union?
Union Catholic. Catholic. Yeah. Union Catholic.
How many alums of RJ Reynolds Academy do you think have become prominent track stars?
I don't know.
Is the smoky lung prohibiting it?
My favorite, despite the fact that he doesn't compete for America, which he should because he's from Louisiana, but his father competed for Sweden. Mondo Duplantis is my favorite, the high jump. He also, or the pole vault rather, he has like 7 of the top 10 all time as well. And he's very handsome. So we had a big Mondo watch party here. I tried one time. I was not good.
What about the, we're not talking about the Australian breakdancer? I mean, that was unbelievable.
Oh, I'm sorry. I watched the breaking stuff and I thought it was fantastic. And every Olympics should have one totally off the wall sport like that. I think it should be there. And also, every Olympics should have Snoop Dogg. Snoop should be at every Olympics. That is an Only in America story. The first time I listened to Snoop was on Dr. Dre's 1992 album, The Chronic. And I heard Snoop, and I was like, oh, who's this guy? I love this guy. This guy's awesome. And Snoop, now he's just like the middle in middle America's living room every night, talking to Ohio grandmothers about Olympics. And I just, again, Only in America.
As a sixth grader, I was going into my parents' liquor cabinet with my friend, and I was like, what would we do? How do you make a drink? And we obviously made gin and juice, because it was the only thing that we knew how to make a mixed drink out of. So it's gin, Snoop Dogg, very important. I have to go, JBL. This has been great. All right. I have to go. I have other content to create.
Good show. Long show. We'll be back next week with the Democratic National Convention and Sarah Longwell. Bye.